Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to another political chat with Dan and myself.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about how the Conservative Party. The Reform Party seems
same to, difference.
Well, that's the... We'll talk about that. Is losing its charisma, right? As the kids are saying, it's lost its riz. Mm. And it's beginning to show. And I don't think they're going to make it to the finishing line. As we were saying previously, they're trying to carry the Ming vase.
Yeah, across the ice rink.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to do it. Mm. I mean, the Reform Party has had so many conservative defectors. As you can see, it now has its own Wikipedia page. And it's quite extensive, actually.
I mean, this is kind of bizarre because their whole pitch is that the Tories are rotten and have letting you down.
That was, yeah.
And I don't think that the Lotus Eaters has a mission statement, but if we did, it probably would be something like the mainstream media have let you down and they're rotten. If there was a Wikipedia page which was just full of people who used to work at mainstream media and now work at Lotus Eaters, yeah, you would kind of think, well, it kind of undermines the mission statement.
Yeah, it would be very bizarre if we hired like Lewis Goodall and Beth Rigby and
yes,
various people from various different mainstream media outlets.
While trying to make the case that we're fundamentally better than them.
And also that we're renegades outside of the system.
Yes.
That doesn't wash.
No.
And this is the same thing. And then, of course, they decided to take in some Labour defectors.
Oh, that actually happened while I was away.
It did. Do you want to hear his opinion on refugees?
Basically, anybody who is lawfully here, who is a British citizen, is a British citizen. Yeah. A British citizen is not determined, Britain's citizenship is not determined by the colour of the skin or the name they use to worship God. Anybody who is here legally is a British citizen and entitled to the full support of the British state. Now, I actually am fairly sympathetic towards refugees, not to people who are seeking a better life at the expense of people in Britain. That's a separate matter. I would like people to be part of one country, one community. I delight in the different colours in here, the different colours of people, the different cuisines, the different clothing. I mean, that is all good for me. I mean, I think that...
So he's making the Piers Morgan curry argument.
He is making exactly the Piers Morgan curry.
I mean, this guy sounds like he's going to fit right in.
Yes, he does.
What's his name, this guy?
This chap was Clive Furness.
Clive. So according to Clive's logic, if I were to move to China and China were to grant me a piece of paper that said you're Chinese now, he would consider me to be a Chinaman.
Correct.
Even though I have 1,000+ years of British ancestry.
Correct. And the Chinese would be presumably thrilled that you'd set up a fish and chip shop.
Yes.
Right? This is just diversity. This is enriching the culture. This is them, you being just as Chinese as them and them being just as British as you. Because, again, notice what you're saying there. Well, if you get this piece of paper, then you're entitled to everything. It's like, okay, that's great, Clive. But you're currently defecting from the party that gives 260,000 of these pieces of paper out a year.
Mm.
Like, and that's just the ones they actually give full citizenship. That's not just a visa. That's to get access to everything. And it's more than 1/4 million a year. It's the size of Swindon every year.
All those people coming over on boats, the most extreme example of this. I know the big problem is people coming over on planes legally. But even the people who come over on boats, they're being given permanent residency. They're given being a house. And they will get British citizenship in time as well.
Yep. The Boris wave with their indefinite leave to remain, that's taking over now. Shabana Mahmood is moving to make that 10 years. It's like, well, if you don't want them here, which is why you're extending it, why not just send them home? Why let them stay here? And then in 10 years' time, it's like, oh, we're going to have to extend that by another 5 years. Are we just going to extend this until they've all died of old age?
Well, it sounds like Clive's position is that Labour had become too right-wing for him, so he needed to move to reform.
Honestly, there are a lot of people who support the Green Party make that precise argument, that Labour
I bet they do.
Too right-wing. Yep. Anyway, so... they seem to be actually constructing a physical uniparty in the Reform Party, which is a strange thing to do. A bunch of, frankly, failed careerists who are going to lose their seats and failed careerists who are going to lose their seats have come together to join Nigel Farage. And so it's very interesting that, again, you don't seem like much of an outsider party if you're the one raising the most money in the British electoral system. Mm. Now, you can see here that Reform have raised more than the Labour and Conservative Party combined. Or just, just more, actually. I think I'm terrible at maths. But the point is about the same. So they're at the top of the lead, the leaderboard. And so, right, they're outraising everyone by a significant margin.
Mm.
Like 3 million more than the Conservatives.
Well, I can understand why the donors do this, because they want to go to the people with the power of patronage, and it looks like it's going to be Reform.
It does, doesn't it? They not only are the best funded political party, which doesn't scream outsider, to be honest. Mm. Guess who the donors are?
Would it by any chance be exactly the same donors as it always has been?
It's all former Tories, so
right.
You can't see very well because of the way this is. But Christopher Harborne, Bitcoin billionaire in Thailand, has given a ridiculous amount of money, 22 million apparently. Then you've got Jeremy Hosking, a former Conservative donor. Then you have Nicholas
Kennedy. I thought he was backing Lawrence Fox.
He has given Lawrence Fox money as well, yes.
Right.
To be a kind of wild card.
Yeah.
In political discourse. And then you've got Nicholas Candy, who's given him nearly a million, which, again, former Conservative donors. And so it's just very interesting how... And then you've got the Leave Means Leave campaign, which has also given a huge amount of money. Mm. So, and again, they were the sort of Tory Brexit campaign. So the Conservative donors are basically moving across to Reform. So it's like, okay, well...
As well as the MPs.
That's not rogue outsiders who didn't previously taken interest and who are now finally the insurrection is here. No, it's just billionaire Tory donors who are now backing Nigel because the Tories are a busted flush.
This looks like Terminator 2, where the T-1000 has been, you know, blasted and is now just reforming in a slightly different shape.
It's exactly that.
Mm.
And it's not just the Tories either. It's Labour too. Having a few Labour defectors come over, yeah, well, you'll get that. I'm pretty sure there was a Liberal Democrat councillor who defected as well, but I couldn't find the information on it, so I'll skip that for now. And so it seems like it's business as usual, right? It really just seems like business as usual. For example, Kwasi Kwarteng announced that he's got a Bitcoin company and that Nigel Farage has taken a stake in it. It's like, right.
Oh.
Okay, and is Kwasi Kwarteng going to defect to Reform? Is this what I guess we call some sort of insider trading, where it's like, oh, right, so you know, you think Nigel's going to be the next prime minister.
Mm.
You've got a bunch of Conservative buddies who have defected over already.
Yes.
He then takes a big stake in your company. Are there going to be government contracts involved? Is this a closed loop?
As I mean, in particular with Kwasi Kwarteng, because he's so associated with Liz Truss, who was actually one of the best prime ministers that the Tory had. Not that the Tories had any particularly good prime ministers, but she was still the best of a bad bunch. Because of the association with her, I suspect that Kwasi himself won't come over, but that's not to say that he won't get some other thing. I don't know, chairman of the bloody Tate or BBC or made a lord or something.
And at the very minimum, if Reform does do some sort of official government business with Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, who's getting the contracts?
Yes.
Right. So, yes, it's business as usual.
Mm.
And speaking of business as usual, Farage decided he was going to do a lovely stunt in a petrol station in Derbyshire, where he had the petrol station pimped out in Reform colours and said, look, here are the prices now, but when we take over, they're going to be £1.26 rather than £1.47 or something like that. So we're gonna reduce the price of petrol. So, right, this is a stunt. This is just a stunt.
I don't even know how he gets to that, because petrol forecourts are price takers, not price setters.
Sure. His argument is he's going to abolish green levies on fuel. So,
right.
And don't get me wrong, great, but everyone should be pledging to abolish green levies.
Again, you can't, because these have all been written into contracts, so they'd have to tear up existing contracts in order to do this stuff. So,
well, these are complex questions that I'm sure that's the sort of answer that, in fact, Robert Jemrick would have given, saying, yeah, look, you were part of the Tory government, you were in power 14 years, why didn't you abolish the green levies? And he'd be like, well...
Yes, the same reason we had the Boris wave is because it suited us at the time.
Yeah, we couldn't really. It was a bit... There were, as you said, there are a lot of contracts, there's a lot of intertwining cords that connect all of these things together. And we can't just cut them all because it'll be chaos. So, you know, you can say what you like. But what was interesting about this is that at this point, he has a bit of a meltdown because he's being gently probed by Beth Rigby on a subject. She's not in any way impolite or impertinent either, but look at Nigel's response.
Just secondly, and thank you for answering that so comprehensively, you're pledging to cut fuel duty and pressing the government to do so, but you also pledged, or some of your candidates did, to cut council tax when trying to win elections at local level, and that's gone up. So how can anyone trust anything you say?
Wrong. Never once last year in the county campaign, including here in Derbyshire, did I ever say that we cut council...
But some of your candidates did,
no,
they haven't.
No. Our literature...
I'll check what the people in Kent said, because they're putting it up.
You can listen if you want to, or we can jack it in now. It's entirely up
I'm
to
listening.
You. We sent out literature with national messaging, which said, end net zero, appropriately. Stop the boats and cut taxes. That was national messaging. On individual county messaging, we said nothing of the kind. Only one party last year campaigned in the locals saying they would cut council tax, and they're called the Conservative Party.
So we'll stop there, but you can see very stressed out.
Well, and also, what is not obvious to me why cutting taxes is a bad thing.
Well, it's because it wasn't possible, right? Remember, Nzia Yusuf...
Oh, a bit like mass deportations.
No. Mass deportations is completely possible.
Right.
Actually, cutting council taxes is actually impossible, as they discovered when they set up their Doge UK unit, sent Nzia Yusuf, I think it was down to Kent County Council, and found that they couldn't actually do anything because the spending is mandated by the central government. So you have to have... this, you have to have that, you have to have X amount for redistributive funding, and da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
All mandated by the central government. And then they're like, right, okay, so what does that mean? Well, that means we've got to raise council taxes by 5%.
So it's true that about 80-90% of council spending is statute spending, meaning they have no choice on it. But the point is, if you become a government, you can change the statutes.
Yes.
And actually, if you look at council budgets, the majority of it is... it's moving money around from people who work to people who don't. It's
Correct.
Adult social care. It's stuff like that. Right. You can change that.
You can, but the issue is he can't do it until he is in government. Right. And Farage and Reform apparently didn't realise this, because they did say, we're going to cut council waste, we're going to cut council spending, and notice how he's being very specific. Well, in this place, I didn't say. It's like, okay, well, that's great.
Yes.
But the implied message that people took away, the sort of banner headline, is Nigel Farage is going to reduce council taxes. And that's why Beth Rigby has come to him and said, but you said you were going to reduce council taxes. And he's like,
yeah.
Well, actually, how about if I cut taxes by not putting them up as much? This is an amazing...
on the politics of it, your leaflets at last year's local elections promised to reduce waste and cut your taxes. Most of the councils that you took control of are putting council tax up, including Kent, 3.99%.
So across the country, we're putting up council tax less than the other parties where they control councils. Our average increase is less than the rate of inflation. We've made over £300 million of savings across the councils. And by the way, I never said we'd cut...
Your leaflet said, cut your taxes.
Well, which means don't charge the maximum of 4.99%.
Most people would think that would be cutting your taxes.
Never once in the country ever did I say we would cut council tax.
I mean, it's literally on the leaflet, mate. But
this is the problem he's getting into. He's trying to run an insurgency message within the uniparty system.
Correct.
And he's discovering that it is incompatible. And I love this, that they've now got the definition of cutting, which is the same as the Conservatives' old definition of cutting, which is not putting up as much as it used to. I remember years ago, I was in the House of Commons having dinner with a Conservative MP, and he was running a department, and he was telling me about all the cuts he's having to make. And I was saying to him, you do realise that your spending is still going up? And he's like, no, it's not. And I said, it is. Your spending, the whole government spending, including your department, the spending is going up. And we argued about this for 20 minutes. In the end, we got up and we went to the House of Commons library and we dug out the Treasury book and I showed him there. And he was like, and he couldn't believe it. And I said, what you've mistaken is that they were scheduled to go up, whatever it was, like 4.5%, and they're only going up 3.9%. And that's what you, that's why you're having to make cuts, because the cost of everything is going up.
Yep.
But you think you're having to make these a few cuts. What you're doing is rearranging where the increase goes due to inflation.
Right.
And he looked at me like I'd blown his mind entirely.
But this is the point. Doesn't Nigel just sound like one of the old guard here?
Yeah, he is exactly what the Tories were.
Correct. And his party is full of Tories.
Yes.
And it's backed by Tories. And now he sounds like a Tory. And so you can't help but feel no amount of stunts in front of a blinged out petrol station is going to change any of this. But the thing is, it didn't stop... people obviously recognise it as a stunt. Didn't stop Beth Rigby for essentially campaigning for Farage. I mean, as you can see, she's just, Reform are going to subsidise prices at a petrol station in Buxton to promote their proposal to cut fuel duty. I mean, can they even do that?
I mean, I suppose...
Are they even allowed to do that? Is that not electioneering in some way? Paying...
Did they actually sell the petrol? I mean, we're not in an election period. But
apparently.
I mean, in an election period, you can't even buy one of your...
you can't buy a cup.
Prospective constituents a pint or something.
Yeah.
But maybe you're allowed to bribe them when it's not an election. I've never checked.
I guess that, as far as I'm aware, there's no legal action against Farage on this.
Yeah.
So who knows? But Beth Rigby there just promoting what he's doing rather than being critical of it. So, and she was the one asking the question. She wasn't being excessively aggressive or probing. It was just, well, you did say this. Is that correct? And Farage had a little meltdown over it. It's like, right, okay. So there's a lot of stress there in what is now just the official Uniparty. And then you have this that came out. Reform UK says it's very interested in taking MI5 up on its offer to help political parties vet candidates amid fears of hostile states meddling British politics. Right. Okay.
So the problem here is that the moment MI5 say, we have a concern about this person, this person, this person, Reform instantly have to get rid of them.
It's hope not hit on steroids.
Yes, because otherwise, what happens if there's a year later and something comes up about one of those candidates?
Yeah, Reform Wales leader who was taking money from the Russians?
Yeah, well, not even that. I mean, if a headline comes up a year later, MI5 advised dropping this candidate and they didn't, they can't take that risk. So what they've effectively done is handed the deep state complete carte blanche to edit the Reform candidate list. And the only people who are going to get through are the people who have the most blandest possible opinions. And I remember having this conversation, because myself and Beau were Reform candidates for a while before we got thrown out for being 1 inch to the right of Nigel Farage at the time. And we met other Reform candidates. And, you know, not wanting to be rude about them, but most of them are basically empty suits. They're people who have
not politicians.
They're not even that. They're just normies who just get all of their opinions from the nightly news. There was not a single thought that they had which was any different to what they had just watched on the TV.
I'm sure they're all lovely people, hardworking,
I'm sure they're fine,
people.
But they're normies.
Yeah.
And they hadn't thought about anything. There is a conversation with them is a conversation with the TV. And I think what Reform wants is basically bland people for whatever it is. Let's say they get 200 seats. They want 180 of them to be completely bland, and then 20 people at the top who decide everything.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't include the clip, but I was watching the Isle of Wight rally that they did recently. Lots of grey beards, right? You can just tell it just a sea of white-haired heads. And at one point, Nigel Farage... Again, sounding quite, honestly, I don't want to say desperate, but I haven't got a better word for it. Mm. He said, look, there's a sign-up sheet at the back. Go and sign up so you can stand as a candidate for us. And you think that with 270,000 members, which is what they allegedly have, they'd have no shortage of candidates all over the place. Mm. You think they'd be everywhere. And it's like, right, come and sign up so you can be vetted by MI5 to join the insurgent party.
Yep.
Hope not hate will go through your social media. Like, this is not an insurgent party.
And let's say you're somebody of real caliber, somebody who's running something important. Are you going to quit that so that you can run for Reform and be lobby fodder, get scrutinised by MI5, and if they discover something, they open a file on you, and then who knows what problems you have trying to even get through an airport from that point on?
Good point. So anyway, I think that we can safely say this is not an outsider party.
No.
In any way, shape or form, this is more of the same, and we see this constantly. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is Farage on Iran, because what's interesting about this is how bad his political instincts were. So the second Donald Trump sent his fleet over to Iran and started bombing them, Starmer's response was, well, we weren't involved and we don't really want to get involved, which actually...
Okay, that's all right.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Like, of all of the decisions Starmer has made, this is probably the best.
Has he stuck to it? Because I've been away for this whole thing.
He has stuck to it.
Okay.
We haven't got directly involved. They've tried. They've sent one ship called the Dragon, but I don't think it's arrived yet. Because it was
probably doesn't work anyway.
That's the problem. Half of it. We've only got about 30 ships. Yep. Half of them are out of action, and we finally got this one off the other day. So it's probably not even there yet, and it's not going to do a lot. And we've been refusing them access to our bases and things like this. So it's been
okay. Well,
it's been quite controversial, frankly.
Yeah.
But Farage came out as an Iran war hawk. This is pathetic. Why aren't we doing something about this?
Why aren't we bombing schools in Iran?
Yeah, I mean, literally, they bombed a girls' school the other day. So, not going to age well. I don't really want to be involved. I've got no particular desire to be in a war with Iran.
Why are we 2 minutes into this and we've already found two examples of how Labour are to the right of reform?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wasn't even trying to make that point. Yeah. But notice how Farage is fully on the neocon plantation here. It's just like, no, this my entire party is business as usual. And when it comes to whatever America and Israel are doing in the Middle East, it's business as usual. This is the same.
Yeah.
It's the same philosophy and in some cases the same people who are advocating for Iraq, who are advocating for Afghanistan. I mean, Pete Hegseth claims to have been a neocon up until 2022 when he had a Damascene conversion. He was like, yeah, no, I was wrong about all that. And now, oh, actually, but not with Iran. It's like, okay, but this is just more of the same. And what's interesting is the lack of harmony within reform. Because Jemrick came out and said, yeah, I don't think we should be involved in this, actually. And he posted a big wall of text on Twitter saying much the same as he says in this interview. And so the question is, well, why does Farage want to jump in? And I think Farage basically wants to be buddies with Donald Trump. Trump has done this. It's unpopular in America. It's unpopular over here, but we'll get to that in a minute. And Farage jumped at it thinking, and this is Kemi Badenoch did exactly the same thing. They both were like, yes, we should absolutely go and help America and Iran. It's like, well, the world has changed, actually, and our relationship with America has also changed. And this isn't something that's been thought through. This has been done quite impulsively. There isn't a plan, as Trump showed. He was expecting some sort of organic uprising from the bottom. It's like, no, you make that happen. You don't get an organic uprising. You have to funnel the weapons, organize the militias. You know this from your experience in the Middle East already.
Well, for example, Syria, where it took 13 years to get rid of Assad, and they thought they could get rid of Iran's leadership in a weekend.
I mean, and moreover, it's one of their jihadis who's currently in charge of Syria now.
Yes.
So it's like, no, you know what the process is, and you just haven't laid any groundwork. You've done no preparation. This is not going to work. And of course, at the moment, Iran and Israel and whoever else are just firing missiles at each other left, right, and center. It's like, right, this not brilliant. So what if Farage jump on it, even though this was clearly not going to be a great idea? Well, I think it's because he's trying to be buddy-buddy with Trump. But the thing is, there's a real question about Trump and Farage's relationship. Because, for example, he went over to Mar-a-Lago recently, and he was basically snubbed by Trump. Trump was told that, oh, right, Nigel Farage has come to Mar-a-Lago, and Trump's like, yeah, I'm not going to bother going. I'm staying in this area. It was only like an hour away as well. So it's not even that far for them to have had this meeting. But this is not the first time Trump has snubbed Nigel Farage. You might remember that Nigel Farage, if I can get rid of that, didn't get an invite to Trump's inauguration either.
And this is kind of striking because, I mean, we both remember the, was it 2016 campaign?
Yeah, where he was on the stage with him.
Farage was a key element of that because the pitch that Trump was making is, look, these guys have just had Brexit. Yep. It shows that an outsider insurgent can come along and shake things up and take away the political orthodoxy. He was up on stage with Trump all the time.
He literally called him Mr. Brexit.
Yes. And now, I mean, we know what Elon Musk thinks of of Farage.
And you'll remember in 2024 when Farage was like, I'm not going to campaign for this election because I'm going to go over and help Trump in America. But the thing is, there were no tendrils, no feelers put out back to him. It's like, we're not asking you to come.
Yep.
You know, you're not going to be on stage with Trump again. And this Trump came over a little while ago to Scotland. last year, in fact, and Nigel Farage didn't go and meet him. It's like, really, he's come to Britain and he's not asking to meet with you. There is not a relationship here. So why did you instantly jump in? Like, Donald Trump has deliberately cooled your relationship. He has deliberately distanced himself. And it honestly looks because you just appear to be more of the same. I mean, at the inauguration, Boris Johnson got an invite, but Nigel Farage didn't.
Oh.
And so, and I know people who went to it, and one of them told me how they bumped into Nigel Farage having a smoke outside just on his own because he wasn't like, invited to this thing. It's like, right, that's weird. Anyway, right. So yeah, when Trump came here, he didn't get an invite either. Anyway, getting back to the Iran thing, it looks like we're staying out of it. Right, it looks like we're just mostly staying out.
I mean, America should stay out of it as well, but I honestly don't understand, and that was what my segment on the podcast was today. I don't even understand what the war was for. I don't understand how it's America first.
It seems to be just regime change in Iran, but without the plan to change the regime.
Well, yeah.
I mean, like, I was actually, you know, in favor of them blackbagging Maduro. Okay, that was an effective, sensible operation. Well,
step one, it worked.
Yeah, it worked. It was targeted. It had a goal: capture Maduro, put him in jail in America.
And by the time we knew about it, it was done.
Exactly, but that can't happen with Iran. So just bombing it until they submit. I mean, I don't want to get into it here, but like, it doesn't make sense. Starmer just doesn't seem to be interested in being a war hawk. The Labour government just doesn't seem to be interested in getting into it, saying, well, they've learned from Iraq after both Trump and Blair have said, come on, you need to get involved.
Well, and also the key reason why we voted for Trump in, well, not we, but...
There was no foreign wars, yeah.
Yeah, no foreign wars.
Yeah.
And...
No forever wars.
Yeah, and it was exactly what Starmer was saying here, learning the lessons from Iraq. I mean, that's why a lot of MAGA went for Trump. It's right. Because of no foreign wars.
And that's why a lot of MAGA are currently very annoyed at Trump.
I understand the Iran war only has like a 27% approval rating in America.
Oh, it's insanely low. And, you know, the fact that he's palling around with Lindsey Graham, and Lindsey Graham has got the first erection he had since the invasion of Afghanistan, you know, it shows that the neocons have managed to get their hooks properly into the Trump administration and into Trump himself.
Such a shame.
Yeah, it's a total shame. I'm not for it at all. Anyway... Who was the first out of the gate to denounce? Well, Rupert Lowe.
Ah, good.
I would vote.
I didn't check, but I thought... Yeah.
Instantly. And the thing is, at the time, the Conservatives and Farage were, you know, Trump's like, right, I'm bombing Iran, and you could see them all coming out of the gate, brilliant. Kemi Badenoch and Farage, I'd like to support Donald Trump in his war in Iran. Rupert Lowe came out with the right response. No war. No strikes, no troops, you know, sanctions, pressures, whatever is fine, but it's not our fight and we don't need to get involved.
Well, how does it, I mean, I said earlier, how does it benefit America? And I can't see a reason how it benefits America, but it most certainly doesn't benefit us.
No, it definitely benefits one country in the Middle East, though.
Well, that is true.
It's definitely been on their list for a long time.
Yes.
I mean, there's a certain prime minister in the Middle East who's been banging this drum for literally decades.
Yeah.
Probably longer than
that. But America first is not supposed to mean Israel first.
Correct.
Frankly.
Yeah. I mean, the British public, Rupert Lowe's just showing his instincts completely aligned with the instincts of the British public on this. People are not actually in favour of it, weirdly enough. On the 2nd of March, you had about, 49% of people who were just opposed or strongly opposed, with about 28% maybe supporting. And that's gone down to 25% supporting and more than half of people saying, no, I'm just not for this. Reform voters themselves seem to be a bit out of step with the rest of the country, frankly, on this one. The majority position is we don't really want war with Iran. What would it bring? What good would it be? And so Nigel Farage, like he has done on almost every issue you can think, I mean, you recall on the last one of these we did, I pointed out that Nigel Farage in 2024 said we're not taking Tory poison into our party, and now it is the reconstituted Tory party. Well, Nigel Farage has changed his position on that too. He changed his position on it on utilitarian grounds, because we are not able to actually get involved in a foreign war, because actually we can't even defend Cyprus, which he is correct about on that.
There's nothing that we can do that America can't already. I mean, it's obviously. So, I mean, yeah, what's the point? But
I mean, there's just nothing we can do is basically the frame, because we've only got one aircraft carrier actually in the sea at the moment.
Yes.
Half of our fleet, which is very small anyway, just isn't seaworthy.
The other 15.
Yeah, we're not capable of fighting a long-range war.
I mean, it sounds like, especially from the link that you showed earlier, that Jenrick had better instincts than Farage on this.
Yes.
And perhaps, you know, Farage just went straight out there with whatever he thought the talking point, the mainstream media talking point was, and Jenrick has managed to talk him around in the background.
Well, Farage went with the Zionist neocon talking point. Right, that was he was like, you know, I know that Lindsey Graham is going to be in favor of this. That yep. means theoretically the Republican Party will be in favor of it. That means the Conservatives will be in favor of it. And I exist in that space in politics. Therefore, I have to be in favor of it. But like you say, Jenrick had a better instinct, but now is contradicting the boss. You know, he's you know,
that's probably going to happen a lot, and that's going to lead to problems.
Yes, yeah. And I think Farage at this point feels vulnerable in that he can't just kick out his best and brightest. Now. So I think he just has to essentially tolerate the fact that Jenrick's publicly.
I mean, he's done this his whole career, get rid of people, and I mean, it really hurt him when he did that to Rupert Lowe because you know it was passable. He can't do it to Jenrick now, so he's going to have to tolerate Jenrick being of a younger generation who doesn't just instantly go to whatever the Sky News line is.
Yeah, I mean, Jenrick has a profile of his own without. Yeah. You know, you can say, well, Ben Habib, Rupert Lowe, you know, they were made by Farage. You could argue that case. I'm not saying I agree with it, but you could at least argue that case. But that's not the case with Jenrick. He is a former Tory, after all, who's defected after Kemi Bade not kicked him out because she found a paper that suggested he was planning to defect. And so they have made a sort of strange bedfellows, because apparently when he defected, there was no talks between him and Farage. So this is all kind of cobbled together. And now they're kind of stuck with each other. And so it looks vaguely uncomfortable when you see them talking. But as Will here points out, look, he's going to change his position on everything. We never said we'd enshrine free speech. We never said we'd conduct mass deportations. We never said we'd scrap net zero. We never said we'd cut foreign aid. I never said we'd have accountability for COVID jabs, or I never said we'd oppose digital ID. You can expect all of this. Because Farage has always been a man of the moment rather than someone who is following a moral guiding star.
Mm.
So he never actually firmly commits to a position.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I've already talked about a couple of times on this episode, there's a number of things he said where I was very quickly able to say, you know, it's not as simple as that because of this, this, that, and that. And, I mean, it seems like every time he encounters one of these, he comes out with what he thinks the right line is that his sort of silver-haired audience are going to respond to, and then somebody comes along and explains it to him, and then he sort of backpedals and pretends that he never had that position in the first place.
I mean, that's precisely what's happened here.
Well, yes.
In fact, have we got an age breakdown here? I bet if there's an age breakdown in here, you'll find the boomers. I didn't do the whole thing.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, I mean, like the fact that it's reform primarily... who think this is a good idea, suggest this is a boomer issue, as in...
The less likely you are to be conscripted, funnily enough, the more in favour you are of,
But also, it's the sort of the boomer view, you know, the Cold War view.
Yes.
That we have to be taking out foreign governments who aren't already on side.
Our Churchill moment, be noble.
Yeah.
Send the young men off to die in a foreign desert.
I'm surprised there's not an age breakdown here. I didn't even think about that when I was preparing this. I think you're correct. But anyway, so you're exactly right. His instinct is to go in a certain direction. But the thing is, his instincts have actually been wrong recently. And he's made a series of blunders. So let's go on to the polling.
Oh, good.
Because the polling is not superb. Now, I've been using the UK Election Data Vault pollster ratings just to contextualize the polling. So as you can see here, you've got the A-minus grades. So you've got YouGov, Opinium, Ipsos Mori, Norstat, Savation, Varian. Then the B and B-minus, you've got DeltaPoll, BMG, Savanta. You've got Focal Data at C, and then you've got a bunch of them on D, JL Partners.
Oh, poor Lord Ashcroft at the bottom there.
Yeah, Lord Ashcroft at the very bottom of the D, with the D-minus. And so you've got these are, as they tell us, based on the accuracy of their polling. How much does the polling actually represent the final results when the elections are actually held? And so this is something that a lot of people aren't very happy with, because they've noticed that actually, if you look at, for example, there we go, opinion polling, we seem to have passed peak reform.
Yeah.
So as you can see, the average opinion polling on electoral calculus is 28%. And that's up until very recently.
Actually. So it was early 25 when it really started to turn. Do you remember when he kicked out Lowe? Because that was the moment that we were like, what?
Yeah, let me just...
Because I mean, he had it all. I mean, he had the mainstream was coming over. He had the feeling in the country. I mean, he had the online right, and then he just did one assassination too many in such a clumsy and obvious way.
I don't even think it's to do with that, because it was March.
Yeah, no, I do remember at the time
25.
The upswing carried on for a little while, then it started to turn.
Yeah, so that didn't actually affect things. But this is basically Farage organically failing on his own. Right, so that's electoral calculus coming down to 28%, and this is the poll of polls. So this is the average of the opinion polls. The Spectator has an average of their opinion polls. You can't make these any bigger, unfortunately, but I don't know whether you can see that they're on.
I can see the trend.
Yeah, they're on 28% as well. But as you can see, from the sort of high of 31, 32, something like that, down to 28. I mean, it's not the most catastrophic collapse, but it's not the trend that you're looking for.
No, and looking at the other lines, they don't seem to be benefiting from it either.
No, it's not really going anywhere. The Greens are actually on a bit of a downswing recently in the average of the polls there. And Labour and Conservative are both just...
Yesterday's
dead,
news.
Dead in the water. Same with the Liberal Democrats, frankly. Like the Greens, you would think, would be doing a lot better given how much they stand to actually gain... how much they have actually gained. I mean, the Gorton and Denton by-election. Mm. And then you've got the Politico poll of polls, which is a bit more brutal. So for their averaging, 25%, which is rough. I mean, this is just...
I mean, when we started doing this, they were high 20s, and we kind of assumed from that they'd be pushing into 30 before long.
Yeah, I mean, you know...
Oh, there we go. They did brush into the 30s.
Yeah, August. And that's the average of 31. So you had outlier polls up 35%. You had a few that were a bit under, but average of 31 there, their high point.
Yeah, and their average is now their previous low mark.
Yes, exactly. And none of the outliers are coming anywhere near what they used to be. So I think we can agree that there has been an organic downturn. And, of course, this coincides slowly but surely with the more conservatives Nigel Farage accepts into the party. Let's look at a few actual polls just to get some, honestly, some quite brutal numbers. Because
down 5.
Yeah.
Well, that hurts when you started on 30.
Exactly. That was 32 down to 27. This is from BMG. That's a B- grade on this poll. Not good, right? That is really not good. The complete opposite direction you want to be going in if you're Farage. The next one is JL Partners, which is a D+, so not great. But Other at +8 there. That's a lot for Other, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's a lot. But what's interesting here, of course, is, again, -4 for Reform. So significant dip in the polls. Labour down terribly as well, obviously. And the Greens on 14. So, again, reflecting...
I mean, that's what, 16% when you start at 30, about that?
Yeah, that's a huge swing. But reflecting the poll of polls, right? It's very similar to the rest of the numbers on the polling averages. So I'm inclined to believe that there is this kind of decay that is set into the poll numbers for basically not just Reform, all of them, actually. The next one here we have is Servation, where, as you can see, they've got Reform on 29, but they're still down. Again, Other on 9%.
That was one of the top-ranked ones, wasn't it?
That was, yeah. Servation are an A-.
Right.
And so, maybe, you know, this... Who knows? I think that 12% for the Greens is probably the more realistic number, actually. Some of the polls have had the Greens in, like, second or third place, which I think is overstating it somewhat. But again, Other 9%. That's a lot of Other.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That could do breaking out at some point.
But like you were saying the other day, we're witnessing the shattering of the political environment.
Mm.
And this can't go on forever. And the fact that there's not much between any of them at this point. Mm. So at least any of the main parties. So it's like, right, okay, that's very, very interesting. But the one that's really getting everyone's back up is YouGov pollings. Now, YouGov, A- in the survey ratings, in the polling ratings, 23%.
Ooh.
Brutal.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. Really brutal, with no change. So this is held on multiple polls that they've had.
Okay.
And look at the Labour Party, though. 17, fourth place. That is just, what is happening?
I mean, to be fair, looking at that list, Reform, Conservative, Greens, Labour, Lib Dem, none of them deserve to win.
No. And they're all on about a fifth of the vote.
None of them are going to change anything. None of them offer something new for Britain. It's all just whatever we've been doing for the past few years or decades, we're going to carry on doing it. We're just going to wrap it in a different set of rhetoric.
Exactly. The fundamental premises are anyone is British as long as they have a British passport. Mm. We are not going to reduce the size of the state. We're not going to bring the arm's length bodies, the quangocracy, under control. We're not going to bring the Bank of England.
We're not going to change the system, logic, or taxes.
Exactly. Right. We are literally here to just tinker around the edges as the thing is already set. And that's not paying off for any of them, really. Like, you get to choose how you dispositionally feel about the rhetoric that comes out of each one.
Yep.
But you know that substantively, they're all going to provide the same thing. And this, when broken down into the seats, is terrible, actually. So this is that polling modelled out in an election, and obviously it comes out to hung parliament, which is, I mean, was absolutely ruined.
So remind me, 650 seats, so a majority, and the Sinn Féin don't send theirs, so it's something like...
326.
326, is it? That's what you need.
That's what you need for a majority government.
And they're on for...
even former government, actually.
They're on for less, more than 100 less than what they need.
Correct. In fact, even with a coalition with the Conservatives...
Which they're basically already in, because they keep taking their MPs.
...would only be 323 seats.
So you would need Reform, the Conservatives, and presumably all of the Northern Ireland parties, and that... But even then, you only just scrape by.
Yes.
So you'd need at least an element. You'd need a confidence and supply arrangement with either Lib Dems or Labour.
It would be an incredibly fragile thing.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, the Greens, Labour and Lib Dems, they couldn't form a coalition even if they wanted to. So there's a shattered country.
This is just Italian politics. This is nothing gets done. The civil servants run everything.
Yeah, there's no coherent agenda. There's no way anything could be fixed. And now, just to be clear, this is the most pessimistic of the polls. Mm. There are polls where Reform gets something like 306 seats. So
but still,
a pact with the Conservatives would work. They would actually be able to do that. But
why do we bother having elections if we're just going to end up with Tory and Labour every single time? I mean, just let them do it on a bloody rota system and save our effort.
But also, I mean, go back 6 months.
Yeah.
This was all turquoise.
Oh, yeah.
This was a sea of teal.
I remember you showing me the map and it was just turquoise everywhere, apart from the odd splodge of yellow and the cities, which would still be Labour or Green.
Yes. And so what Farage has done here is actually broken the Ming vase, right? He has actually failed to maintain what was a commanding position, more than 30%. Which is all Labour won on in the last election, remember?
Yeah, yes, good point. Right. And less than Jeremy Corbyn got.
Less than Jeremy Corbyn got to get their 418 seats or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Farage was regularly being predicted to get 400 seats.
Yep.
Like, this was an easy government in waiting, and he had the swagger to go with it. Well, he made a series of really bad decisions.
Well, you showed us a couple of videos. There's no swagger in any of that.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Sounds stressed.
Yes.
He sounds like he's a man who realizes the opportunity is sliding through his fingers.
Yep.
And I'm sorry to say it, but it's Nigel Farage's decisions that have caused this.
100%.
You didn't need to take in Nadeem Zahawi, Nadine Dorris, Jemrick, Sweller, all the other Tories.
Mm.
You didn't need to take in the pro-refugee Labour councillors or the ones in the Senate, the Welsh thing. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You didn't need to take in a bunch of Tories. Yeah. You didn't need to take Tory donors to be your men, to be your funders. You didn't need to then come out and give uniparty talking points. It's like, well, we're cutting the taxes by not raising them as much as other people are raising them. which I don't even know if that's true, by the way. I didn't even bother checking, so who cares? And you didn't have to come out in full-throated support immediately of the Iran war that nobody wants. Mm. And yet you did all of these things, and you've shown people you're not really the alternative that people thought they were.
Well, the thing is, he's got the attention on him now, because everybody thought, yeah, he's going to win. As our earlier discussions, we all thought that he was going to win with a landslide, which means he gets the attention. And when he gets the attention, you discover that he's actually not in any way different to what was offered before.
At all. Mm. He just sounds like a Tory MP. And so this is pretty awful for Reform. Genuinely yeah. awful. This is not a government in waiting. And so all of that hassle is like, remember the other week when he did his big event where he's got the podiums, he's like, this is going to be my shadow chancellor, this is going to be my shadow home secretary. And it's like, okay, well, it very Hillary Clinton congratulations to this next president.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's like, okay, but it doesn't look like you're going to get that now.
No.
And this isn't the only poll, of course, that is rather harsh. I mean, there's a Lord Ashcroft poll here that has him on 22%. Which is just oof.
I know Lord Ashcroft got beaten up, but he was the closest on a previous election. I can't remember.
He was closest on Brexit.
That was it, Brexit. He pretty much nailed Brexit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that ranking of pollsters is a bit, you know, what have you done for me lately? But you know, that ultimately, any of those pollsters could be right, and none of them are good for him.
Yes, that's exactly right. Any of them could be correct, and none of them good for him. And so, you, what's weird about this is, like, Guido Fawkes are like, oh yeah, why isn't he getting to where we expect him to be in the other polls? Mm. Like, well, and as I say, of the last 10 published Westminster Intention voting polls, YouGov's average for Reform has been 24.8%. Well, the average from Opinion was 30%. It's like, okay. YouGov are hardly a deeply anti-Farage institution. I mean, no. Their co-founder is in Reform.
Yes.
So
Nadeem Zarawi.
Yeah. Now, he doesn't work with YouGov now. He's actually left it and does other things. But the point being, you'd think there'd be some sort of, you know, institutional sympathy for him because, I mean, he was the founder, right? I mean, what is that? Not did they turn?
Yeah, I think there was three of them. I met them once when they were pitching, but yeah, I think there's two others. I don't know what happened to them, but presumably they're still in.
Exactly right, and so you can't be like, okay, well, YouGov is producing this statistical outlier out of bias against the party its founder is now in. Like that just doesn't wash. It doesn't.
In fact, I seem to remember that was it all three of them? It might have been all three of them were Tory councillors for. One of the London boroughs which had a Tory council on it.
Mm.
So yeah, no, they're all of the same sort of ideological bent.
Yeah, they're all people with inside the Westminster consensus.
Yes,
and that's fine. I mean, obviously that's what you'd expect. But you can see the sort of cope here. YouGov is the odd one out. Well, no, it's not the odd one out. That's the thing. There are actually a couple that do say this, and this is a problem that they're grappling with. Is well, what if YouGov are right? Because as we saw at the beginning, well, they get an A-minus result. That's the best result that's on that pollster rating. They're not terrible. Like, and you know, I don't know what to tell you. I've thought they were terrible in the past, but the longer that I've done this, the more I've realised, well, they're as reliable as any other poll. That's the point.
Yeah, I mean, it's not saying a huge amount, but as exactly. polls go...
It's not saying a huge amount. But I think it might be capturing something. As with the Lord Ashcroft one, I think it might be capturing a general lack of riz. That
well, the poll to poll things that you showed, I mean, the trend is the trend, and it's down.
Yeah, even yeah, exactly. On all of the polls, if I can get there.
Yep.
But, yeah, all of the poll to polls, it's just downwards.
Yeah, that's a line going down. That you could ski that.
Yeah. You absolutely could, and it's not what you want. If you're purportedly the government in waiting that's announcing shadow cabinets, which I mean, like. Everyone got a Nigel Farage's rear end about that, but you're not the opposition party. You can't have a shadow. Okay, calm down. They are leading the polls.
Mm.
You know, calm down. You know, it's fine for them to sort of preemptively say it, but it's only fine to preemptively say it if it's actually working.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that it is. There was another poll here that had Restore organically placed at 2%. And what was interesting about this...
When you say organically, what you mean is they were not...
They were not prompted.
They were not offered Restore. They just made a point of saying, no, Restore.
Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain makes his first appearance in our polling, registering 2% in his first outing. Your party comes in at less than 1%. Both parties are initially prompted as part of another party or independent candidate response option. So you've got to click other than Rupert Lowe, right? So, yeah, anyone who does anything with the internet will know that the more clicks you have to make, the more attrition you get.
I mean, the entire Amazon business model is reducing the number of clicks because it really matters.
It really matters.
Yes.
So the fact that 2% of them were like, yeah, no, other things. So that to the point where Restore had to break through is very interesting because this is one that didn't directly prompt for them. So I mean, when directly prompted, there have been ones where they've been on 7%, 6%.
Oh, yeah, 8%. Much higher.
Yeah, much higher. But even when not prompted, people are like, no, I'm having that. So that's interesting.
Well, not only are they not prompted, they're not covered on the mainstream media, which is still what most people watch.
Absolutely. And Nigel Farage was like, well, you'll be on 1%. It's like, well...
Well, they've already doubled that.
Yeah, exactly. They've already beaten that. And just to finish off, what are the important issues that people are concerned about?
Is it Iran war at the top?
No.
Oh, right.
No, it's not.
It's immigration, the thing that apparently we can't do anything about.
Yeah, it's immigration.
According to Nigel Farage himself, who says it's impossible, according to his latest defection, says, no, actually, it's okay to have immigration as long as you get the curry.
Yes.
The one thing that the people, British people, care about more than anything is the one thing that all of those prompted parties will not give you.
Correct. And also the one thing that, again, he flip-flops on. Mm. And so you've got, and I mean, I forgot to bring up for this, but The Guardian published an article about a poll that had been done of Reform members, and 54% of Reform members said that they think that non-white people should essentially be encouraged to leave the country.
Bloody hell, that's a lot harsher than even we go.
Yeah, exactly. I've never said that. I'm not. I wouldn't advocate for that. That's a bit bloody far. Yeah. But the point is, Nigel Farage, I think, is misunderstanding his own base.
Right? Well, I would go further and say that his own base is misunderstanding him.
Well, there is that.
The reason why he's still getting whatever it is, 22, 24%, is because that 22 or 24% of people think that he is going to do deportations and a hell of a lot harsher line than even we go on stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when they start, and basically what he needs to do is to not let his own base discover what his policies are, because if they figure out what he's really about, that 22% will go down to like 6 or 7%.
I completely agree. That is Nigel Farage's current key strategy. Yes.
Make sure nobody finds out about what I think.
Yes. Yeah. Literally.
Whereas Rupert's low strategy is the opposite. Make sure people find out what I'm about.
Correct. So the defense was 35% because it's been in the news, right? The Iran war. But
well, I note that it says defense, not blowing up schools in the Middle East. But yeah,
sure. But like, you know, the defense of the country is an important issue. When there are these things going on. But as you can see, like immigration, and the economy have been pretty collectively tied as being the most important issues, and they are deeply tied together, of course.
I mean, there's something you can take from that. If you're trying to win power in this country and you had an honest media, you would just talk about immigration or deportations and the economy and taxes just all day long. That's what you would talk about.
Well, you tie it together. We're going to deport people and your wages are going to go up.
Yes.
That's the selling pitch. But anyway, so the point being here, frankly, like, Nigel Farage is not the man that his own party think he is.
Nope.
He is not going to get any of the things that anyone actually wants done because he's already committed to the uniparty premises of government.
Yep.
He's not going to fundamentally change the structures of any of these things. And I don't even think he's going to win.
No. And I think that he knows everything you've just said.
Yes.
And that's why in every video that you've just shown us,
he's stressed out.
He's stressed, he's rattled, he's uncomfortable. That is not
it's not the swagger of a year ago, is it? You know, because that was the thing. And that's the thing that really stuck in my mind watching that the petrol station gimmick. It was like, wow, he doesn't look confident.
No. Right?
And he did look confident. And rightly so.
Yes.
You know, rightly so. Like a year ago, he looked like he was about to smash the entire thing. And it looks like the swamp has basically taken him in.
Yes.
And made him...
He's now the horse in Never-Ending Story. I mean, he's being dragged into the swamp and he's, oh, bugger.
Or it's like the Borg or something from Star Trek. Where it's like, I'm Locutus of Borg or whatever it is. It's like, oh, right, okay.
Yep.
Right, I get it. This is just more of the same. Yeah. And I think the gradual, slow, but what appears to be essentially an inexorable decline is locked in now. Because if people, as I personally view, I mean, I don't know what the average person is turning away from reform for, right? Mm. Why aren't they impressed with Nigel Farage? Why aren't they supporting
him? Well, I think it's because they've listened to what he's actually got to say and they don't like it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is they were like, I wanted an outsider. I think a lot of it is I didn't want Tories or Labour. And I think...
I tell you what it reminds me of. If you go to McDonald's and get a burger and take the meat out, it tastes of nothing, literally nothing. What they do is you can then put whatever sauce and gherkins and cheese on top of it, and all the flavour comes from that other stuff. I think the reason why reform have worked is because they've allowed their supporters to project onto them what they wanted. Oh, it's different from the Uniparty. This is what I want. That must be what they're about. And he's got nowhere to go because he can't...
Well, that's always been his rhetoric. Like, yeah. His rhetoric is always the one of the outsider.
Yes, but he's got absolutely nowhere to go now because he can't abandon what he's actually for because he's boxed in with the people who actually watch this stuff and pay attention, and that's where his support's coming from. That's where his institutional backing is coming from. But at the same time, he's got to stop people from actually seeing what he's about. But you're not going to do that with all of the attention on you for the period of the next 2.5 years.
But I don't even know if he can do that because
that's why he's boxed in.
Completely. But I think he's also like what he's done is made a series of choices that made the decline inevitable, right? Because if he was saying, look, I'm not Labour or the Conservatives and we're actually going to be a patriotic party that's going to fix this country, well, now everyone just sees Tories.
Yes.
Tory backers, Tory donors, Tory MPs, Tory councillors, whatever. And the media is treating him like the Tories. When he comes out with Tory rhetoric is, well, we didn't raise it as much as the Labour Party would have done, so you know, vote for us. I think that what he's done is made essentially a prison for himself, where he can't go anywhere else now, and it's just going to be a slow decline. And so the question is, when does Nigel Farage pack it in? Because... If it's averaging 25 now, what happens when it's averaging 21?
Well, I mean, the reason why he was out of this for so long, the reason why Richard Tice was running it for so long...
is it wasn't polling anywhere.
Yep. And he thought, well, I'm just going to go and make lots of money being on GB News.
Yep.
And doing my...
I'll go to America to help Donald Trump. Not that he wanted it.
He's always been very fair weather on this stuff. As you've said, he only came back because he was convinced he was going to win. And how long is he going to stick around doing this day in, day out, this stressful job, as opposed to making lots of money? It's not going to be for that long.
Well, that's the question. And so I think that the gradual decline will continue. From everything that we can see at the moment, there's no reason to think that the gradual decline won't continue. Mm. And I think that when it gets... I mean, imagine if it goes below 20. Like, I think he'll just bounce. I think he'll just be like, yep.
The slightly more funny thing would be, what if he bounces and then Robert Jenrick takes over?
And it improves. Because, exactly.
will he do the same thing as he did to that guy in Clacton? Will he come back 5 minutes before the election and boot Jenrick out and say, right, I'm in again now?
That's a great question. Yeah. And I guess it'll stand to be resolved. Mm. But anyway, Reform seems to have just lost their riz.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.